Welcome to What is Going Om for New Thought from the Edge of Om. Each week on Om Time's flagship radio show, veteran broadcaster, author, and media consultant Sandy Sedgbeer conducts thought-provoking interviews with inspirational authors, artists, musicians, scientists, speakers, and filmmakers who are working at the point where spirituality and science meet consciousness at the very edge of Om. Here is your host, Sandy Sedgbeer.
Hello. Tonight we're going to be expanding on a conversation I had 7 months ago with Dr. Jacob Israel Lieberman, a pioneer in the fields of light, vision, colour and consciousness. Dr. Lieberman's vision spontaneously corrected in 1976 while he was meditating. That experience catalysed profound insights that transformed not just his vision, but his entire life. Originally trained as an optometrist and a vision scientist, today Dr. Lieberman is an internationally respected public speaker and author whose first book, Light, Medicine of the Future, established him as one of the world's leading authorities on light and colour therapy. Dr. Jacob Lieberman rejoins me now to share more of his research and his experiences helping people heal past trauma and illness with what he terms colour homeopathy. Dr. Jacob Lieberman, welcome back to the show.
It is such a pleasure to be back with you, Sandy. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Well, it feels like only yesterday, and I know we finished up that show with me wanting to know so much more and share so much more. So for those of you who didn't listen to that show last August, you can find it in the archives, and it does contain a lot of information about that pivotal experience that I mentioned and how it ultimately led Dr. Lieberman to investigate the therapeutic value of light and colour. But for now, we're going to delve deeper into the therapeutic properties of colour and how we can use it to heal past trauma and enhance our physical, mental and emotional health and well-being. So let's start by talking about Mary Jo Zimmer, whose story about her experience with you and with colour homeopathy appeared in an edition of Women's World magazine last month. Tell us about Mary Jo's story.
Well, Mary Jo had experienced a very, very traumatic loss in her life. Her husband of many, many years had passed from cancer. She, of course, was mourning and in a very difficult space. And she reached out to me. We had never spoken before, and we began working in the same way that I typically work, because most of my work is one-on-one. Aside from the time when I'm writing and researching and public speaking, I mentor individuals one-on-one who are going through difficult parts of their life's journey. And Mary Jo was in the midst of the dark night of the soul. And so we befriended each other, which is the way that I enjoy working with people, because I feel that whether a relationship is intimate or professional or a friendship, both parties have to see their own humanity within the other. So I always say relationships only work if everyone is the same height. And so Mary Jo and I developed a friendship, a relationship, working in this way, primarily via Skype, because she lives in a totally different part of the U.S. And we essentially try to look at color as the different vibratory aspects of the experience we call life. And you know how there are aspects of life we feel comfortable with and others that seem to trigger reactivity within us. And so what I have found for the last 40 years is that same pattern is mimicked in our color preferences, meaning the colors that we seem to be able to embrace or that we enjoy looking at or wearing They vibrationally are associated with experiences in our life that we are at peace with, that we feel receptive to. However, the colors that we recoil from, that we say, gee, I don't like that one at all, they are vibrationally related to experiences in our life or somewhere within our cultural memory that we are unable to embrace, that seem to trigger up reactivity that is the foundation of what transforms ease into dis-ease. In other words, these colors represent the experiences that trigger stress in our life. And since stress is responsible or significantly contributes to about 90 or 92% of disease, I found this relationship to be very, very powerful. And so we did a color visualization, a color analysis, to determine what colors was she comfortable with, what colors was she uncomfortable with. Once we determined that, I basically sent her some color filters in the form of little simple glasses that she could wear for small periods of time and then gradually increase those periods of time. At the same time, I had her use a form letter, a letter of completion form that I have evolved, that allows her to write letters to people in her lives that maybe she feels she has some unfinished business with. And the whole purpose of this letter writing is that the color seems to awaken these unresolved traumas, and the form letter gives, in this case, Mary Jo, the opportunity to empty out her feelings. Once she writes a letter, she doesn't have to read it. She can just shred it or burn it. And so working in this way, along with having periodic sessions that we did via Skype, very gradually, Mary Jo went from a place of not feeling good about being alive to actually being excited about being alive. And so the story that you read was a short summary of her experience and a little bit of a summarizing overview of the last 45 years of my work, working in this way with many, many thousands of individuals.
Well, the thing, one part that people need to know about that story, according to the article, is that she found you through your book, which was delivered to Luminous Life, which was delivered to her house, but she hadn't ordered it. And she has no idea who did or how it got there. So that's a nice little piece of synchronicity there. But let me ask you this. So how is it that our body, our system, our mind, whichever part of us it is, all of us, develops an aversion or, as you term it, an allergic reaction to a color based on an experience?
So let's take this back a little bit. So if we took a movie and we filmed every experience in a person's life, and now the person is 50 or 60 years old, and we sit them down in a movie theater, we hook their fingers up to little monitors that measure their stress response, their heart rate, their respiration, their muscle tensions, their brain activity, and then we begin to show them the movie of their life. You know that some of the experiences would allow them to have a sigh of relief and would slow their heart down, lower their blood pressure, and so on, those experiences that they have fond memories of. But if they then saw an experience that had traumatized them for some reason or another, you would notice just the opposite. Merely remembering or seeing that experience would cause their blood pressure to rise. They would have a typical stress response. Now, all of us know that in our lives, Every day we encounter experiences that we feel at peace with and experiences where it seems like we're almost having an allergic reaction to someone or something that just brings back a yucky memory for us. Well, when you evaluate what life is, most of us, we think of life as the people we meet, the experiences we have, but if you speak to a scientist about the nature of reality, they will all tell you exactly the same thing. What we perceive as the external world is actually energy that when it interacts with our perceptual mechanisms, we interpret in the way that we see them. In other words, if a bee, a snake, a dolphin, and a dog, and a human were all looking at the same thing, none of them would see the same thing. They would all experience something very different because their perceptual mechanisms are different. So what am I actually saying? Everything that we perceived as matter, as something that is solid, is actually energy that is transformed into the appearance we see it because of the kind of perceptual mechanism that we have. So, for instance, if you say to a scientist, does the world look like this? And they said, no, it's just a quantum soup. It's just a field of energy that we interpret in this way. If you then look at the brain, which is very interesting, there's nowhere in the brain where pictures exist, or where sounds exist, or where smell or taste or feeling exist. In other words, all of those sensorial experiences we have are something that lies within this domain which no one really understands called consciousness. So how is color related to experience? Because at the most fundamental level, the energy from where life emerges is the energy that we call light. Perhaps this is why the Bible describes God, the creative force, as light, why quantum physicists say that light is the most fundamental energy in the universe from where all life emerges, and why people who are interested in spirituality and spiritual texts all describe consciousness as light. So essentially, what we call an experience is a transmutation of energy, the energy of light, into something that we experience as form. So when someone is looking or visualizing a color, which is essentially a vibrational portion of the light spectrum, that experience triggers up, unbeknownst to the individual, the same memories as actually re-experiencing the actual experience. Now, I didn't know that 45 years ago. I just happened to come upon this as a clinician when I had someone look at a specific color, and all of a sudden they started having all kinds of feelings coming up about an experience that they had in childhood. I then started seeing that this was occurring routinely. And then I realized that color is just vibration, and life is just vibration. And so the colors that we're unreceptive to are directly related to the experiences that trigger stress in our life. And so that's how that relationship exists.
I once sat in on a kinesiology session with a friend of mine, and the kinesiologist, towards the end, used some Aura Soma oils on her. And one in particular that the kinesiologist chose had an instant reaction, my friend. She just right. burst into tears the minute it touched her skin, and she had no idea why.
Right.
Which you're talking about the frequency, aren't you? It triggered.
It's exactly the same thing. If you look at the Aura Soma oils, what's interesting is It's not only an oil, but those oils are all different colors or different layers of colors. And so there is both visual vibration, and there's also an auditory, an olfactory vibration, something that we can smell. And then, of course, there's a direct transmission through the skin. So Orosoma is utilizing the exact same approach, but approached through a different sense, a different medium, if you will. But it all works the same way. Someone can be listening to a piece of music that for one person, they don't even like it, and for another person, it brings them into tears. It's exactly the same phenomenon. And what's beautiful about working with energy rather than working with an actual experience is that the experience can easily be blocked by the mind, because the mind doesn't want to experience something that is traumatic. But the color, in an incredibly subtle way, can very gently slip beneath conscious awareness right to the heart of the matter, just like the example you just gave with the Orosoma oil. And so it can touch a very deep part of it, us, and it can do it in a very, very subtle way, which is exactly what needs to occur whenever we're dealing with matters of the heart.
Yes, I had years and years ago when I was studying astrology, I read in one of Linda Goodman's books about purple plates, and also the trick of getting a red glass and putting water into it and wrapping it in saran wrap and then putting it somewhere in the sunlight so it could absorb the sun's energy, and that red would then have, you know, a warming effect on the body. We'll come back to that after the break. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and my guest today is Dr. Jacob Lieberman, who's a pioneer in the fields of light, vision, color, and consciousness. We'll be back with more from Dr. Lieberman after the break.
The future of internet radio is here. Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose: to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
I am Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called Bukavu in the Congo.
We were a loving family. And then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day.
People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle to America, and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything.
I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at EmbraceRefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Dr. Jacob Lieberman, you've used color therapeutically since 1971, but it wasn't until 1977 that you were introduced to the system of color therapy called Syntonics. You did a lot of research with that and some of the data you used in your dissertation. And that data demonstrated that Syntonics increased attention, learning, memory. It was valuable in the treatment of migraine headaches, pain and inflammation of the eyes, as well as head trauma. But its major benefit was its ability to expand a person's visual field and their visual memory. Why are those two important?
Well, because the field of vision is really a measurement of how much information an individual is able to receive per second in a specific period of time. When we are under stress, what happens is our field of vision begins to diminish. And so we see less, we experience less, we remember less, and we function at a lower level. Essentially, we stop seeing life as a whole, and we begin perceiving life through a whole. And what's significant about that is over the years, I worked with thousands of children that were diagnosed with reading problems, learning problems, and behavioral problems. What I found routinely is that a very high percentage of these children had a very, very small visual field, which means they could see directly ahead of them, but they could not perceive things out to their side. And so their coordination was frequently impacted, their reading ability, their learning ability, their attentional ability, and so on. And these visual field constrictions, if you will, were not caused because there was some disease or pathology. They were related to prolonged stress. It could have been the stress of a child having problems in school and not feeling comfortable about wanting to attend class or feeling inferior in some way because they can't read as well as the other children. It could be that they fell off their bicycle and had some head trauma, or that maybe their parents are having relational issues and the stress of that has impacted them. What I notice is, regardless of the cause, by utilizing color by way of the eyes, in less than a month, their field of vision began to expand, and expanded fully most of the time in less than a month, at which point these kids would all of a sudden, to use the quip, see the light. They literally opened up. They began communicating more. Their handwriting improved. Their ability to learn, their interest in learning, their relational skills all changed, because all of a sudden their world that had been sort of constricted opened up. To give you an example, because I imagine most of our listeners are adults, we've all gone through difficult times when we feel anxious, or maybe we feel melancholy or depressed, and things just appear dark to us. The reason they appear dark is literally because our field of vision has constricted. And when all of a sudden we have a moment of awakening where something gets resolved or the situation has changed, it almost feels like the sun has come out. We notice that things feel brighter. And the reason is that the field of vision expands. You see, this thing we call our perceptual field or our field of vision is dynamic. It expands and contracts in the same way as our breathing does. And what I've noticed is that when we hold our breath, our field of vision constricts, and it does it very quickly. Why is that important? Because whenever we're stressed, we have a tendency to hold our breath or to breathe in a very shallow manner, what we call clavicular or upper chest breathing. So color is a very beautiful, subtle, and non-intrusive way of expanding one's functional field of vision so that they begin to see life as a whole again with a whole new set of eyes.
What happens then in cases where, say, I mean, I know some children who have mechanical problems with their eyes, something's missing and not both eyes don't turn the way they should. I have a relative with that particular problem, and it's quite a rare one. But nevertheless, you know, in one eye, her visual field is very restricted. I know other children that have had to have surgery and procedures on their eyes because of similar things. How are they being affected then?
Are you talking about children that have a crossed eye or an eye that looks either in toward the nose or
yes.
outwards?
Yes, or one that doesn't move properly.
Yeah, one that doesn't move is probably caused because of a what we call a paralysis or a paresis of one of the muscles around the eyes. And that's a different kind of a situation. I'm not sure how it would impact that. But most of the time, children that I work with, or even adults, who had eyes that turned in, when I check the field of vision, you would notice that the eye that was looking straight, its field of vision was pretty full. But the eye that wasn't used very much, its visual field was rather constricted. And what was interesting is that when we applied color, the visual field of the eye that was turning in expanded. And when it expanded, it gave the child a greater opportunity to learn how to use both eyes together. Because, you know, when we look out into the world, the right eye has a certain field, a certain part of what we're looking at that it sees. The left eye has a slightly different part that it sees, and then there's an overlapping portion that both see. When you expand the field of vision of one or both eyes, and you expand the area that both of them can see, you then simultaneously expand the area of overlap. And that gives you a starting point many times to utilize something called vision training or vision therapy to help these children learn how to use both eyes together. And when they do that, very often the eye that was turning all of a sudden starts to be able to look straight ahead.
It's interesting how spectacles with a certain of a color tone are being used with children with dyslexia, and it's making it much easier for them to read.
Well, essentially, you're talking about the work of Helen Erlin, and where they use different filters to help kids read better. We were doing essentially the same, a slightly different approach than what Erlin was doing, and this was in the 70s, where we weren't using a color filter to compensate for a reading problem. We were using the filter to expand the field of vision and other neurological functions so that the child could begin learning on their own without any compensation. The filters are a very good tool that Erlin is using, but keep in mind something. It only works as long as you use the filter. So it's a way of compensating for the problem, but it doesn't actually cure the problem. The Syntonics was another application, but very different. It was going in through the eyes and literally creating movement within the brain and the neurology of the individual, so that very often the end result was a permanent change.
So
there was no compensation needed after that.
Would the same colors work for everybody? Or, as you know, in Mary Jo's story, it was specific colors that related to her emotional traumas and issues that were causing her depression.
It's an individualized thing. Everyone has a different color analysis. Everyone has a different aspect of life they're comfortable with and an aspect they're uncomfortable with, and everyone has different color preferences. However, at the end of the day, we want to expand the individual's ability to receive all the different wavelengths of light. In other words, the full spectrum of what we call light. And so what I've done is, because for years, and you know, I've been doing this approach for more than 40 years, but people say to me, gee, I'd like to be able to do this, but I live somewhere else. There isn't a doctor in my area. Is there a way you could create something that I could use at home? And so what I've done is I've created a kit. It's called the Spectral Receptivity System. And what it is a series of 13 custom-designed color filters that span one end of the spectrum to the other. And it comes with a manual so that the person can actually do an analysis on themselves that take them through all the colors to notice how they respond to each of them. And I do it in a very, very simple way, but it's incredibly effective. As I mentioned before, when we encounter something that is a little traumatic or uncomfortable, it literally takes our breath away. It limits our breathing ability. And so I have people put on the glasses and just notice how it impacts their breath. How many breaths are they comfortable taking in with this particular color in front of their eyes? And what they notice is quite fascinating. The colors they're receptive to, they can just breathe them in, and they feel like fuel being put into their system. They're nourishing. But when they come into contact and they start looking through the color filters that trigger reactivity, they can't breathe it in. It constricts their breath. And so this allows the person to do a self-test, a very, very simple self-test that anyone can understand and experience at home. And then, rather than saying use this color and then this color and then this color, what it does is it sets up a 28-day protocol so that over a period of a month, each person goes through every color repeatedly, each time breathing in more of it. In other words, we very gradually desensitize the person from the mechanism that makes it difficult for them to allow this color in. And what happens is, over time, they become comfortable with the colors that used to feel uncomfortable. And what occurs at the same time is they then become more receptive or less triggered by the life events that used to trigger stress in their life. Now, why is this so important? All of us are familiar with the field of mind-body medicine, or what we call psycho-neuro-immuno-endocrinology. Essentially, what that field of science has proven is every idea, thought, emotion, feeling, intention, belief that we have, that we identify with, is literally materializes into what we call informational substance, chemical messengers that replicate those ideas, those beliefs, those feelings, those thoughts, and represent them throughout the body, so that the body basically becomes a replication of what's happening in the mind that we believe to be true. So our biology then mirrors what's happening within the mind. And so what's fascinating about this is how we create stress in our lives. So if we can diminish the experiences that trigger this dis-ease, then we diminish these chemical messengers that literally begin to create stress in the body, and our life begins to change.
Yes. Well, talking about stressors, let's talk about technology and the awful effect it's having on vision, because there's now a worldwide epidemic in deteriorating vision, isn't there, as a result of the widespread use of computers and handheld devices. And in your book, Luminous Life, you go into this in much greater detail, and it really is fascinating information we all should read. But you talk about, The human eye is primarily intended for distance vision, not all of this close reading that we're all doing all the time. And you talk about the concept of near point stress. So tell us a little bit about that.
Essentially, try to imagine what you would feel like if you had to spend your life in a small room without windows. You'd probably notice that within a short period of time, you wouldn't be able to breathe easily. It's like people that go into an elevator for too long and they feel stressed. The reason we have windows is so our eyes can escape. Why is that? We have two eyes in order to have three-dimensional, or what we call stereoscopic vision. Whenever the eyes are looking at something like a book that blocks the three-dimensionality, it takes your neurology and our biology, which has evolved for millions and tens of millions of years, it's evolved for three-dimensional use. When you put something in front of the eyes that blocks it from three-dimensionality and diminishes it to two-dimensionality, you immediately create stress. And what we discovered in the 50s and 60s through research is that whenever a child is reading, within a short period of time, the body goes into a stress reaction. And the result of that is that the eyes tighten up and begin to deteriorate. And that not only occurs for humans, but it occurs for animals as well. You put an animal in a visually confined environment, and it will become nearsighted. And that's why nearsightedness and vision deterioration is the world's largest healthcare epidemic. And where do we see most of it? In all of the industrialized nations where higher education is the primary focus, whether it's in Asia or in the Middle East or in the US or in Europe. And so whenever you go to these countries, you find that 80 to 90% of the kids are wearing glasses. And when you go to college or graduate school, the percentages can get much, much higher. So now that we know that diminishing a three-dimensional system, our eyes, to a two-dimensional plane like a book creates stress and nearsightedness, now let's multiply that many times. Because, you know, when we were reading books, books were larger. But most of the time people are reading on their iPhones, or children are playing on these small little handheld devices. Well, that all of a sudden increases the stress very, very significantly, which we can expand upon even more, and that really deteriorates our vision.
Well, we'll talk a bit more about that after the break and some of the things that we can do. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with internationally respected vision scientist, speaker, and author Dr. Jacob Lieberman about color and how we can use it to heal ourselves.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, OM Times Radio, IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. they have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Dr. Jacob Lieberman, how can we use color and light to advance our health and well-being, particularly in light of, you know, the way our eyes are being assaulted all the time with technology?
Well, in terms of, you know, what I described before, in terms of color to desensitize us, that's a very, very major, major piece, because stress is the major cause of disease. That's the very, very biggest cause of probably 90% of disease. So desensitizing from the triggers in our life, which some people can do at home, other people do it when I mentor with them, that for me is the primary piece. In terms of other things that can be done, it's extremely important for people to get outside into the sun at least 30 minutes a day and to irradiate as much of their body without clothing on as possible. So I recommend to people, if you have a place where there is sunshine, and some places don't have so much, and if you have a place that is private, put a bathing suit on or whatever feels comfortable. Lay outside for 1 minute on your back and 1 minute on your belly the first day. Do it every day and increase by 30 seconds to a minute every day, and do that sometime in the morning. My preferred time is between 6 a.m. and 12 noon. But I think that earlier is better because the sun is not as hot. Why is that incredibly important? One, every function of the body, just like every function of a plant and every function of an animal, is light dependent. There isn't any aspect of our physiology or our life that is not dependent upon light. And so just like a plant will shrivel up and not grow if you keep it in the closet, if we have an indoor lifestyle, we are contributing to our lack of ease, to our illness, the development of chronic disease. So that's number one. For people who live in places where there's less light, there's a field that I've been involved in for many years that is just hitting the public in the last few years. It's called photobiomodulation. And what that essentially means is the modulating effect of light upon our biology. So let me explain that a little bit more. Most people think that the energy that we have is directly dependent on the food that we eat. But essentially what we've discovered is that only a third of our energy comes from the metabolism of food. Two-thirds comes directly from the metabolism of light. In other words, it's the light that we are ingesting through our eyes and our skin that is powering two-thirds of our life. And the portions of the spectrum that primarily turn that mechanism on to create energy with every cell in the body, what we call ATP, the portion of the spectrum that does that is the red and the near-infrared portion of the spectrum, which is primarily on very early in the morning and also late in the afternoon, but early in the morning is its most potent stage. In other words, the red and near-infrared turn everything on. They turn your engine on. They get you moving. They accelerate healing. They're using this right now for just about anything and everything you can imagine. I'll give you an example. My brother-in-law has only one kidney. His kidney was functioning at 10%, and they wanted to put him on dialysis. I got him a little simple red and near infrared device that he puts on his single kidney for 15 minutes a day. He did that, and in 3 weeks, his kidney function went from 10% to 15%. He continued his kidney function, the last test, is now up to 18%. He's no longer a candidate for dialysis. Now, there are no studies on this right now, but there are a lot of researchers that are reporting this for kidney function. But you can use this with issues of the eyes. There are certain conditions of the eyes that red and near infrared can literally trigger transformative changes where vision begins to improve. Irradiating it on your body can increase the energy tremendously, but you need to know what portion of the near infrared is optimal and whether it's something, you know, the use on the eyes and use on the body is very, very different. People very often contact me and consult with me directly about this. I'll give you a quick example. I have a client from Estonia, very near Russia, and contacted me because every year during the winter, he's not only terribly depressed, but his sexual function and his digestion and all of these problems arise every single year. He's tried bright light therapy and a million different things. Nothing has worked. He contacted me. I suggested that he do this. I suggested a specific device for him. His whole life has turned around. His digestive issues, his energy, his testosterone levels, everything has begun to normalize, and he's happy now. So what I'm sharing is light is something that is incredibly profound. We not only take in light from the sun, but we are created from the energy known as light. And light is triggering every reaction in the body. To give you an example, in 2017, the Nobel Prize in the field of medicine or physiology was won by three U.S. scientists who discovered the molecular basis. In other words, they discovered how each of our cells utilize the changes in light during the day and the absence of light during the night to trigger our physiological functions, to basically tell every cell in the body what it has to do, when it has to do it, and to what degree to optimize our health and wellness. So what their research literally found is light is continually enhancing the software of our humanity, bringing us into a state of oneness with light and life itself. So light is very profound. It's the most powerful environmental factor in our lives. And this is why I enjoy doing these kinds of interviews, because it's been so impactful on my life and the more than 50,000 people I've had the pleasure of working with.
There's a lot of technology these days. It's advancing at such a pace, and you can do some amazing things with it. And we're seeing a lot of this, the smart home, smart light bulbs. I received for Christmas, my son bought me a small lamp, which is one of these smart lamps. And literally, it's like a disc, and you put an app on your phone, and you can basically create any color combination from, literally thousands upon thousands of color combinations. Now, are these things good for us, or do they have, are they going to be problematical?
Well, it's like anything else. You know, one of the things we have learned is that what is natural has no side effects. What is normal consistently creates side effects. So, for instance, when we ingest the medicine, that has this, what we call the active ingredients to treat something, it comes usually, even though we synthesize them in the laboratory now, these things originally come from some natural source that contains a whole spectrum of things in it so that it's fully balanced. So what I'm saying is when we create things from our ideas, from our limited view of reality, they all have side effects. So technology is both brilliant, but I also refer to it as weapons of mass distraction, because mm-hmm. so many of these technologies are creating worldwide problems. For instance, most people are addicted to their cell phones. They're looking at them all day and all night, and their computers, and their handheld devices, and their Kindles. And so what happens is the light sources that come from these devices are predominantly the blue part of the spectrum. Now, there's nothing wrong with blue light. There's a huge amount of blue light that comes from the sun, but there's also a huge amount of red light, so they balance each other out. But when you create a technology that is primarily blue light energized, much more significantly than what we get from the sun, then it activates the functions that are activated by blue light. Well, what does blue light do? Blue light is the predominant wavelength in the sun during the day. It's what keeps us awake and attentive, and what causes our body to work during the day. Well, that's perfect during the day. But if you start looking at your iPhone at 9 or 10 at night, or your computer, all of a sudden that light source going through your eyes tells your body, forget about the fact that the clock says it's 11 p.m. It's time to wake up. And so what happens is what your body knows that it needs to do, which is sleep, it can't do because the blue light causes it to think that it's daytime. So the use of these technologies is not only disrupting our sleep, it's disrupting our glucose metabolism. It's causing people to become overweight. It's causing all kinds of emotional issues. And in fact, people who are on the night shift working when most people are sleeping have a much higher incidence of certain types of cancers because they're reversing what is natural. But you don't have to be a night worker to experience these things. If you go to any major industrialized city, London, New York, Los Angeles, Hong Kong, Tokyo, if you look from a satellite up in the sky down at these portions of the earth, you'll see that they're lit up 24 hours a day. What does that mean? Well, you go to sleep at night and there's a street light outside your window. Unbeknownst to you, you fall asleep, but that light is still disturbing the release of a very powerful hormone called melatonin, released by the pineal gland of your body. Well, since the pineal regulates all the other regulators in the body, when you interfere with the release of melatonin, you start impacting everything. And so now they're finding that excessive light at night, what they call light pollution, is also increasing the incidence of cancer and many other chronic illnesses. So your question is a really good one. Technology is miraculous, but we have to use it in moderation. It should be used by day, not late at night. We should have our computers by windows so that we still get plenty of natural light and so that our eyes can look over our computer, as I'm doing right now, and escape. Have some freedom of looking off into the distance. And It's the same with the use of our cell phones and so on. These things are creating tremendous problems. I mean, how often do you go to lunch or dinner with someone and they are continually on their cell phone? So yeah, this is interfering not only with our health and wellness, but with our relational dynamics with each other.
Absolutely. We're going to have to leave it there, Dr. Lieberman. You know, once again, we've run out of time before we've run out of topics to discuss. But thank you for being with us. I am going to encourage people to read Luminous Life, How the Science of Light Unlocks the Art of Living, because there are so many more aspects to this whole conversation than we've been able to cover tonight. The book is published by New World Library. And I encourage people to go to your website where they can learn more about your mentoring and consulting services, watch your videos and audios, and find out about your spectral receptivity system, which is the homeopathy kit that Mary Jo used to bring herself out of depression and find a whole new lease of life and light. Dr. Jacob Lieberman, thank you. I'm sure we'll be talking again.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. Thanks for joining me today. I look forward to being with you at the same time next week. And I don't know if I gave you Dr. Lieberman's website, but it is quite simply Jacob Lieberman. I think it's .org.